Good morning and welcome to the Iowa Supreme Court. We're involved on the campus of the University of Iowa College of Law. We welcome students and other visitors in attendance today. The hearing now before the court is entitled Shoshone County versus S&W Ops LLC. This appeal is brought by Shoshone County, and county is represented by Richard T. Smith, who will be arguing today. Good morning, sir. And Benjamin assists him by appearing. The respondents are represented here by Peter J. Smith. Good morning, Mr. Smith. Counsel, do either of you have anything for us prior to your argument?
No, Your Honor.
Very well then. Mr. Richard Smith, take a seat.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. It's good to be here. I feel closer than normal after having driven all this distance. So it's kind of a funny feeling. It is particularly appropriate, I think, that this case is being heard in a law school setting because there are some basic concepts of appellate practice and civil rules that I think are really important in this case. What does de novo review mean? What is the standard of review? What is the burden of proof? And how do those concepts relate and interact in this case? These are important principles in this case. Specifically to this case, this is a property tax valuation case. It involves about 10 groups of properties in and around the Kellogg area. Many of the properties are used in connection with the Silver Mountain Ski Resort. In fact, the ski area property is part of the property that's being valued and is subject to the appeal. The Shoshone County Assessor valued the properties. The taxpayers appealed the value to the Board of Equalization. The Board of Equalization upheld the values. The taxpayer appealed to the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals held a hearing. First of all, I need to say the Board of Tax Appeals doesn't have much of a discovery process. You can't take depositions. You can file a motion for permission to ask interrogatories and document requests, but it's very limited. Board of Tax Appeals has its hearing, issues its decision. The decision results in a value in the aggregate for all 10 of these different varied properties of about $6.3 million. Shoshone County and Shoshone County Assessor appeal that decision to the District Court. Now another process begins. There is new discovery. There are new sets of interrogatories, document requests. There are no depositions. There were no depositions. You can't have depositions in a Board of Tax Appeals case. There are new expert reports that are prepared. There are new experts who are retained for the district court trial. There is new testimony that is prepared. There's new counsel that has been retained for the district court case, me. The district court case goes forward. It covers 4 days. There are 6 experts and 3 lay witnesses. And the case is presented finally to the judge for decision. Now, at the very beginning of the trial, the district court set the stage for the procedural posture of the case. And I just want to quote, in the first hour of the trial, the district court said as follows, "And just to let you know, Mr. Smith, I read your submissions in this manner. I will inform the parties that I did not read the order from the Board of Tax Appeals, except for the last page. I didn't want that coming into a trial de novo, into the mix of a trial de novo." Now, the last page that the district court was referring to was the page where the Board of Tax Appeals announced its valuation decision of $6.3 million. And that is the decision that was appealed by Shoshone County. Now, what the district court ultimately did in its findings, facts, and conclusions of law was basically to say that you should have, Shoshone County, you should have focused on the first 26 pages of the decision. Because I wanted you to tell me how and why the Board of Tax Appeals decision was incorrect. So to say the most important issue before the court is, what is the meaning of de novo review? And a related question is, in a de novo appeal, is the case to proceed and be decided based on the evidence presented to the district court, and only the evidence presented to the district court? Or is the district court in this case correct in saying that there's an additional layer of analysis that an appealing party must undergo? That the appealing party must discern what was the basis for the BTA's decision? What was the reasoning for the BTA's decision? How and why did the BTA reach its decision? So in addition to proving by preponderance the evidence in evaluation case, what is the value of the property? The district court imposed the burden on the party of demonstrating how and why the BTA reached its decision on an entirely different record. On an entirely different record, this is what the BTA did. And in the district court case, the parties are required to determine why the BTA did what it did on an entirely different record.
Like you said, this case really focuses on trial the number, what that means, and then the application. I can get that. But isn't this case really, it's core about statutory interpretation and the way the district court interpreted the applicable statute here, and it's, as I think as he captured in the opinion, internal inconsistency in stating the standard of review vis-a-vis the trial de novo. So isn't this also really about how we interpret that, you know, somewhat perhaps confusing statute? I think from your brief, it may not be that.
Well, I suppose that is part of the case. That is the difficulty apparently the district court had. I think the district court got kind of wrapped around the axle over what the word decision means in the applicable statute. And let me turn to that. The statute 63-3812 says that there will be a trial de novo on the issues in the same manner as though it were an original proceeding in the district court. The burden of proof shall fall upon the party seeking affirmative relief that the decision made by the BTA is erroneous. And I guess the confusion of the district court was, I think, on that word decision.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but I think he also, down further in the statute, focused in on this language that the court may affirm, reverse, or modify the order, which seems to grant the court some type of reviewing standard as opposed to a deciding standard, if you will. Because how are they to modify or affirm? So if you'd add that to your comments, please.
Certainly, Your Honor. And in the context of this case, the decision in the case was a valuation of $6.3 million. The district court could either say, okay, based on the evidence presented to me at the district court level, I can affirm that amount, that value of $6.3 million, or I can modify it based on the evidence before me to what I see the value of the property is in this de novo trial. So, the decision is the valuation decision of $6.3 million. The district court can modify that by increasing it or decreasing it based on the evidence presented to the court. That's what the court did in the amalgamated sugar case. That's what the court did in the Stender case. In all those cases, the district court reviewed the evidence presented before the district court. It didn't try to reverse engineer what the Board of Tax Appeals did. It focused on, and that's the only way I could see that you do a de novo trial. You look at the evidence in the record before you, that is presented before you as the trial judge, including expert testimony, that only you as the trial judge can evaluate, right? You've got six expert witnesses in this four-day trial. You have to make a determination as to the credibility of those witnesses. Ironically, the district court did and said, okay, county, your witness is more credible. And then reaches the result, affirming a value at the BTA concluded, $6.3 million, when the expert for the taxpayer, Mr. Arney, had revised his opinion of value to about $8.5 million at the district court level. So how can a result possibly obtain where in a de novo trial the district court affirms a $6.3 million value as held by the BTA on the record before the BTA when the taxpayer's own expert had increased his value to $8.5 million? I submit that just illustrates the reason why de novo means de novo. It means looking at the evidence presented before the district court and basing the decision on that evidence.
Well, counsel, bringing us back to the meaning of the word decision in 6338-12C, do you believe the word decision is ambiguous or unambiguous?
Unambiguous. In a valuation case, it is unambiguous. You could have a case involving whether property is exempt. The decision in a case like that is if it is exempt or it's not exempt. That would be the decision in that case. The decision in a valuation case is what is the value of the property. That's what was on page 27 of the BTA decision, the page that the district court told us is all he was going to read. I see that I only have 9 minutes left that I'd like to reserve, so.
I think that's left in your opening, Madam Clerk. She automatically factored that in. I think that's left in your opening.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I can continue then.
Well, counsel, before you sit down or continue, as the case may be, let me ask you, assuming as you stated that the district court kind of wrapped itself around the axle on the standard of review, if we were to look at the findings that the court made, because there were explicit findings of fact as to valuation in the court's decision. What about his finding the facts were not supported by substantial and competent evidence?
Your Honor, his findings of fact said he recited what the valuations were before the Board of Tax Appeals. And then his conclusion with respect to each piece of property was that the county did not show how or why that valuation was correct. Well, first of all, that's not the standard.
That's not really even a finding, is it?
I don't think so. But secondly, and this is kind of the second part of my argument, we did show how and why. With respect to each piece of property, we did show how and why the Board of Tax Appeals decision was correct. First of all, you don't know what the Board of Tax Appeals held. You know, it's a 27-page decision. The first 20 pages are simply reciting what the different witnesses said. Then there's a couple of pages on here's what the standard of review is, here's what the applicable statutes are. And then there are a couple of pages talking kind of in generalities about the board's view of the evidence. They said, you know, we think the income approach was the better approach, and I'll talk about that in a minute. It said the previous sale of the property should receive some consideration, but then it never said how much, it never said what that related to in the context of the case. And then the ultimate values were somewhere in between what the taxpayer's expert ended up and where our expert ended up. So you don't know, you really don't know what the Board of Tax Appeals reasoning was. It's a hard thing to try to attack. All you can do, I think the opposing counsel probably makes the point that we're just speculating on what the board said, and it's probably, right in some respects. We're speculating. We know that the Board of Tax Appeals ended up somewhere in between our expert and their expert. Our position is that it gave too much weight to their expert. It had to give more weight to their expert for it to end up where it did. And their expert was completely discredited during the district court trial. And again, this shows the importance of the differences between the record of the BTA and the record before the district court. In between the BTA proceeding and the district court proceeding, there were depositions. Deposition number one, their expert changes his report. We hire rebuttal experts. Rebuttal reports come in, their expert changes his report. We get to trial. New facts come up. Their expert changes his report, changes his opinion. These are seismic changes between what happened at the BTA level and what happened at the district court level. But in terms of what the BTA relied on and how we showed what they relied on was incorrect, I mean, yes, it is an inference, I suppose, that they must have relied on Mr. Harney, but it's the only reasonable inference there is. And Mr. Harney was totally discredited at the district court trial. And one other evidence of that, by the way, read carefully the taxpayer's reply brief. At least with respect to the ski area and the water park, they never once referred to Mr. Harney. They take our expert, Mr. Voss, as the baseline for kind of performing a new appraisal on their own, and trying to back into a number that would justify the Board of Tax Appeals' value. They don't say that their own expert was reliable. They validate our conclusion that the taxpayer's expert was discredited at the trial. And if that's the case, what opinion evidence did the BTA have? It basically had none. So getting again to the how and why of how we proved that the how and why the BTA was incorrect. The only two things that the BTA said in its opinion that you could take as kind of a substantive statement that would support some value, it's hard to know how or why it would support it, but the BTA did say, we liked the income approach. You know, we liked the income approach, and the inference was that they liked the taxpayer's income approach more than the county's income approach. But again, that goes back to the, and so how and why did we show that was incorrect? We showed it with our witnesses. We showed it with the rebuttal witnesses that challenged Mr. Arney's income approach. Mr. Arney used only an income approach on the ski area and the water park. And that may have been what the BTA was referring to when it said, we think an income approach is better. But where we basically destroyed Mr. Arney's income approach at the district court level, then we did show how and why the BTA was incorrect.
Counselor, we have essentially three records before us. We have the record before the Board of Equalization, the record before the BTA, and now the record that took place at the de novo trial. Do we need to look at all three of those records, or should we just be looking at the evidence that was produced at the de novo trial?
Absolutely the latter. Only the de novo trial. You know, we cited the Levitt case as a case that it's a court of appeals case that said, you know, the BTA decision is really expunged from the record before the district court. The Levitt case cited a case called Wynn versus Wynn. And that's a Supreme Court case where basically this court said the same thing, that you either have, and this is like in Rule 83, I think, in appeals for magistrates, you either have an appeal that's a real appeal where the district court is sitting in an appellate capacity and you're looking at a record and you look at it on a substantial evidence standard of review, okay, over here, or you go over here and you do a de novo, which I think the term, the Wynn versus Wynn court said, you wipe the slate clean. Well, that's what you do. You wipe the slate.
It's a do-over.
A do-over, absolutely.
Well, why do we do this petition for review? Because it seems to me it creates this tension where petitions for review, we're looking at an appellate record, or we're looking at the record below from whatever entity made that decision, and we're doing exactly what Judge Christensen was looking for, which was, tell me what was wrong, or at least when you make the decision, tell me what was wrong with the agency's action. And then, you know, that sets up the appeal. Rather than, this is just an entirely new decision-making opportunity, and we don't look really at anything that happened below.
Yeah. I'm not sure why we do what we do, but I'm not sure that's what we do. transcript, I don't know if there was a transcript before the Board of Tax Appeals, but if it was, it wasn't admitted as part of the record of the district court case. I don't think anything in the Board of Tax Appeals case was part of the record in the district court case. I know we never referred to it, you know, during the hearing. I mean, you could have referred to it, I suppose, as to point out inconsistencies between witnesses, you know, witnesses' testimony. But it really didn't come into play in the district court case, and it shouldn't.
So, Mr. Smith, as I understand your argument, you're suggesting that when Judge Christensen conducted the trial, it was a trial de novo, giving no credence or deference to the BTA, and that the language in the statute that talks about the burden of proof merely establishes that it was Shoshone County's burden of proof to show what the value of the property was. And if they did so by a preponderance of the evidence, they sustained the burden that they have.
Correct. And ironically, that's what he told us to do at the beginning of the trial. You know, and like the rules changed, not only in the middle of the game, but at the end of the game. And now he says, oh, well, now you've got to look at the first 26 pages and tell me why they're wrong.
Well, in his defense, I'm not sure that the statute is a matter of clarity.
Perhaps not. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Peterson.
May it please the Court, my name is Peter Smith. I represent the taxpayers, Chief Justice, Justices of the Idaho Supreme Court. I'm going to start with the statute because I really think this was a valuation case, and now it's turned into a statutory interpretation case. And as I do that, I'd like to walk the Court through kind of my understanding of the process and what the legislature did here. The legislature allows a taxpayer, if they receive their tax assessment in May of each year, to file an appeal. And that first appeal goes to the county commissioners, sitting as this Board of Equalization. And Idaho Code Title 63 provides a process to do that. And every time I've ever gone before the Board of Commissioners for clients, I lose. They rubber stamp the assessor and say, this value is fine. And then we have a choice as a taxpayer. And I'm going to refer in my analogy here to the process as if I'm always representing the taxpayer. The taxpayer then has a choice under Idaho Code 63511. The choice is to go one of two directions. I can go to the district court immediately, or I can go to the Board of Tax Appeals. If I go to the district court directly, the language of the statute sets forth a burden of proof. It says the taxpayer has to prove by preponderance of the evidence that, and this is key, the valuation was erroneous. If I choose to go to the Board of Tax Appeals, I have that same burden. I have to show that the valuation, which then usually looks back at the assessor, was erroneous. And there's evidence that's presented to the Board of Tax Appeals. If I go to the district court, the district court is hearing the case and determining whether or not the valuation, the word the legislature used was valuation, was erroneous. So we would have all of our experts played in. The Pacific Court case talks about this is a battle of experts. And as counsel pointed out, we had a battle of experts. We had two battles of experts. We had 9 days of testimony from experts. We had experts that held up under cross-examination, and we had experts that didn't. If you go directly to the district court, that's the battle that's had. And the judge sits there and then tries to figure out the appropriate valuation. And we've had cases come straight from the district court to this court, and the court says, well, is there substantial evidence? We've got all these appraisers saying this, and I would propose that if you had 15 appraisers appraise a piece of property, you would get 15 valuations. Just because that's how it works in valuation. It's not a science, and it's an art. Especially when you're dealing with commercial properties and this income approach and capitalization rates, and my version talks about a lot of that. Now, if you go to the Board of Tax Appeals and you have your valuation analysis, what happens? Under the rules to the tax commission. They're charged to write a decision, and that's what they do. They sit down and they say, we think it's worth this. They determine the value of the property at that point. Now, the legislature in 2013 amended all these statutes I just discussed, including 63-38-12, which I'm going to get to in a second. So presumably it knew what it was doing in the words it used. That's what we have to presume. And maybe that's a higher benefit we give to them than what they deserve, but this is what they did. In 63-38-12, they laid out a different burden of proof than when you go directly to the district court or the Board of Tax Appeals. They stated that the burden of proof on the taxpayer who's appealing, if they lost, is to show by preponderance of the evidence that the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals was erroneous. From the beginning of this case before the district court, in every pre-trial brief and every argument, we laid out the issue isn't whether or not the valuation of the property is correct. We are focusing on what the Board of Tax Appeals did. In their decision, were they correct? If the court, the district court, found the Board of Tax Appeals was incorrect, and they had, the county had the burden to carry that. So at trial, we presented these experts, we argued it, and as a backup, we had our expert come in and say, well, I think it's worth this, if the district court happened to find the Board of Tax Appeals was wrong.
But counsel, in a trial de novo, how can you get the result that the district court reached here without looking at the 26 pages of analysis from the BTA and contrasting that with the 9 days of testimony that took place at the trial? It seemed like the court was saying, I'm not going to look at that, I'm just going to hear what you're saying now, and without looking at what happened before, I can't say you proved that what happened before was wrong. First of all, that makes no sense to me. Second of all, it certainly doesn't sound like a trial de novo.
So, the court at the beginning of the trial said, I didn't look at anything in the opinion from the Board of Tax Appeals. I only looked at the last page, which is the valuation page. So if you're looking at it from the district court under Iowa Code 63511, they would look at the valuation page and say, I'm going to figure out if that was correct. The court, I think, was correct in not looking at the rest of the decision, because this was a trial de novo to determine what. It was there to determine if the decision of the BTA was erroneous.
And doesn't the fact that your own expert gave a higher valuation at trial than they did before the BTA, and the court didn't accept that, doesn't that belie the idea that there was any kind of review of what happened before? Compared to, doesn't that belie the idea that there actually was a trial de novo if the new evidence was disregarded and the old evidence was simply accepted as a matter of course?
I think the court was focusing on where was the error made by the Board of Tax Appeals in its valuation.
But that sounds like an appeal, not like a trial de novo.
Correct. And if this is a mixed bag on the statute, I don't know why the legislature wrote it this way.
No, why?
But the burden of proof on the county in this case was to show an error in the Board of Tax Appeals decision.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think an equally plausible and maybe more plausible explanation is that it simply instructs the trial court to give the person challenging the BTA's determination the burden of proof. We always have to have somebody who bears the burden of proof. And in this trial de novo, Shoshone County bore the responsibility to prove its case. And frankly, in reading the district court's decision, it's what I would call damning of faint praise as far as your client's evidence is concerned. And so how do you reconcile this apparent obligation to try the case de novo and yet look at what the BTA did and determine whether the proof overcomes the BTA? Those are two diametrically opposed concepts as far as I'm.
And I think the focus of the question is on the question of law. What is the legislature intending to mean by the word decision in one statutory provision, and then valuation in the other channels that we could go to appeal a case? And we don't have a definition of the word definition of decision other than what's plainly put out in the dictionary.
But what's interesting, counsel, is in the statement of purpose for that bill, that statement of purpose refers to changing the standard to one that requires simply that the assessment is erroneous. And so doesn't that really indicate Justice Stegner's view is more correct than your argument that the decision requires a review of the methodology employed? Didn't the legislature say, we're making these changes to deal with appeals of the assessment, which is the value?
The statement of purpose, and what I believe the legislature was dealing with, is prior to the amendment 2003, the taxpayer, for example, or the county assessor, had to come before the BTA and the court and show that, by clear and convincing evidence, that the decision was arbitrary and unreasonable. So the standard was much, much higher.
Right, but the statement of purpose isn't talking about the decision. It's talking about appealing the assessment, which is the value.
And I would say that that is correct in that they are speaking about the burden of proof that's being carried, not what's being attacked. Now, I can only go with what the legislature said in 63-38-12, and why it chose to use the word decision versus valuation. I don't think that statement of purpose speaks to that. But it was directing the district court on the trial de novo. You're going to hear a trial, you're going to hear all the testimony, and one of these parties, for example, if I were the taxpayer appealing, and I got a BTA decision I didn't agree with, I would come to the court and I would say, Your Honor, here is the BTA decision. My burden is to show it's erroneous. On page 3, it did this. That's where it's wrong. Here's my expert to testify that. On page 5, this is what it did wrong. Here's my expert to testify to that.
But you're not talking about a trial de novo in that sense. You're talking about an appeal that attacks the BTA's determination and valuation.
It's de novo that you can have new witnesses and testimony, and those two terms, you know, we're focusing on the attack of the argument rather than the, and you can have experts testify that the BTA got wrong and this is how they got it wrong. And I think that was the district court's finding. And the district court made a finding of fact, and it said, I heard no testimony attacking the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Therefore, in applying the statute as it's plainly written, I had a de novo trial on the issues that were presented to the BTA, and my focus is on whether or not the BTA's decision was erroneous.
Then the district court should have read the opinion and not just the last page of it.
He stated at the beginning of the trial, he only read the last page. I don't know if the district judge read the entire opinion. He perhaps, I believe, was waiting for the county to present evidence that on page 10 of the BTA decision, it reasoned this wrong, or that is completely wrong, because it must have been relying on this or that, or whatever the argument was.
This all sounds so circular to me. And it's very predictable and understandable, and good lawyering that you're focusing on the, you know, the decision was erroneous language, and no one's focusing on the de novo language. That's exactly what we would expect you to do. But really, they need to be read in concert. If they're read in concert, I'm still puzzled by the fact that during the 9 days of testimony, your own witness upped the evaluation of the property, and the district court completely disregarded that and went with the BTA's assessment. I mean, that would suggest to me that the judge didn't even consider the de novo evidence that was submitted. If your own expert said it was worth 8.5 and the court found the 6.5 wasn't clearly erroneous, I just don't understand how you get to that point if you're really conducting a trial de novo.
And to follow up with that, how is that decision supported by substantial and competent evidence?
The decision on whether or not there were any evidence attacking the BTA decision?
No, the your witnesses discrediting of the BTA's determination and the judge finding that Shoshone County's expert was more credible than their expert.
I think it goes to the burden of proof and who carries the burden of proof. Now, as we went forward with the trial, from the beginning we said we need to, the issue before the court is whether or not the decision of the BTA was erroneous. As we went into the trial, we had an alternative argument, which was if the court finds it's erroneous, then here's our expert and their expert. And the trial judge, at the conclusion of the trial, said, well, the county's expert was more credible than the taxpayer expert. The judge did not rule that the county expert was more credible than the BTA decision. And in appraisals such as this, it is a battle of the experts, and in theory, one of the experts before the court was the BTA in its decision, and that was not attacked. Now, we're dealing with just strict statutory interpretation. And I think that the county...
Before we get back to the statute, though, I want you to address the question that I asked, and that is, if the same expert that testified before the BTA upped his evaluation in the de novo trial, how can the court ignore that?
The court ignores it if the burden of proof carried by the county under the statute is not met.
So he found that that your expert's testimony was credible before the BTA, but not credible at the trial de novo?
I think he found that the decision of the BTA was not, the burden was not carried to show that it was erroneous. Now, the BTA, backing up to its decision, it had 4 days of testimony. And between that hearing and the trial, there was depositions, as counsel has talked about. There were new opinions rendered by all the experts in the case. And the BTA, when it heard that original hearing, it went through the process of evaluating that testimony. It didn't land on one expert or another. It decided on its own, this is how we're going to evaluate it. And I think the reason the legislature has these statutory provisions set up the way they are is, I believe it views the tax commission as the experts in these valuation cases. These are folks that hear them year after year. They come with experience, and they can reach their own conclusion as to the valuation, which I believe is why the legislature says you go directly to the district court for arguing valuation, and then it uses this other word, decision, when you go from the BTA to the district court.
It just seems to me like it's walking through a trial de novo with blinders on to take evidence that something was worth $6.5 million, and then the same expert says, you know what, it's really worth $8.5 million, but for some reason we're not going to consider that. We're just going to go back to the $6.5 because no one proved that was wrong.
I believe the district court was following what the legislature intended on that.
Let me jump on that, because when I read the BTA's decision, I have no idea why it reached the valuations it did. I agree with you, it didn't expressly adopt one expert or the other, and they spend a while talking generally about the testimony, I prefer this, we like this better, and then you just announce values. How can Shoshone County challenge a decision that fails to set forth any rationale or reason for the values reached? How are we supposed to challenge that?
Exactly that way. You call your expert to the stand and you say, did you review the BTA decision? Yes, I did. Did you see any problems with that decision? Yes, I did. What were those? If we want to follow what the legislature said in the statute, what we're supposed to attack, that would be the line that he would take to attack the BTA decision.
But if your expert comes in above the BTA, and Shoshone County's expert comes in above the BTA, how do we then say, well, the BTA knows what they were doing, and we don't have any evidence to support that, but we're going to affirm it nevertheless?
Well, it was really only one expert who was credible at trial, and that would be the county's expert. I believe the expert that we had, and I'll admit this here and now, that in the cross-examination eviscerated his testimony. He had
very described as fluid, which is not necessarily helpful in these types of cases.
Correct. That it was not helpful at all, and with being trial counsel, it was not a fun experience to have to go through that. That being said, there was only one expert that was presented, and as the finding of fact of the district court was, we never heard the exact attack that would take place on the BTA decision and say, how could they possibly have done this? Now, I don't know why the legislature set this up the way they did, but I'm saying my position is that under the statutory interpretation, as we read through this, they created two different standards for two different types of hearings.
Is there some in pari materia kind of argument then that we have to consider this independent statute and not just read on its face the clause that's at issue here? You're saying that this other statute says it's a value question and this one's a decision question. They have to be somehow read together to answer this?
I believe they're enlightening for the court to view what the legislature intended. If they wanted the same process to be followed on each one, it seems they would have used the same word. Now, it to rewrite the statute would be simple, right? You say the evaluation is erroneous in 63-38-12. And that would open up exactly what we're talking about here, which is you go and you just present all your evidence, and if my expert's better than their expert, I win. But for some reason, the legislature didn't do that. We focused us on the decision of the BTA.
Why do we have to reword it, though, to get to that result? Isn't the valuation really the decision? I mean, this is a case about a tax appeal. The whole point of the tax appeal is to determine the valuation. So the decision is the valuation. Maybe to give the legislature a little credit here, maybe they thought, as used in this statute, they were synonymous. And perhaps they had good reason to think that.
Perhaps. And I don't know what they were thinking. All I know is what the review that was written. And the definition of decision is a process to come to a conclusion.
What other decision could have been made other than valuation in a case like this? Isn't valuation the ultimate decision that's being made?
Valuation is the conclusion. And how they reach that is a process.
Right, but wouldn't it be synonymous then? I guess what I'm saying is, if the decision is what the value is, then value is the decision.
Then in 2003, the legislature used two different words for no good reason. And I have to read this and say they must have intended what they wrote and meant to call out something different than what the earlier statute, 5111, where you can go directly to the district court, and this statute, which is an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals.
To me, this looks like if A equals B, then B equals A.
Perhaps. But I think when you read the statute, I think the court is required to ask, did the legislature intend something different? They gave a different burden of proof here with a different word, which is defined slightly different in the dictionary than valuation.
And why isn't decision just meaning the document? The BTA produces a decision. The party appealing this document has the burden of proof. And the document, in the final order section, sets forth a value. It doesn't go into, an analysis of, we liked this approach, or we took that approach, and we tweaked it this way. It comes to a value. And so I take that decision, and I appeal it to the district court, as opposed to the process.
And that's a great question, because that's just saying that valuation and decision are synonymous. And the legislature meant the same thing. We're just talking about the two different
pieces. No, it's meaning decision is the document produced at the end of the process. I'm appealing that document.
Yes. Again, in statutory interpretation, we have to assume that if they used a different word, they meant something different. And I mean, that standard is where we're really struggling with what does that really mean in this context. And I think when we view all the statutes together, and the different processes that the legislature put in place for tax appeals, it appears to me that they had a different intent with 63-38-12. And that intent was, we have this Board of Tax Appeals, and they are filled with these people appointed by the government who are experts in these fields. And the district court, it needs to be enlightened, because the district court is an appraiser. And I think your decisions have stated it's very difficult for a district court who handles a lot of cases to come into an income approach, sales comparison, cost approach, all this mumbo jumbo appraisal stuff, and figure out what the value is. It has to rely on someone.
But it is difficult. We acknowledge that. But isn't that what we expect the district courts to do, the finders of fact, to do that difficult work? In Stender, isn't that exactly what we allow the district court to do? And then we defer to the district court's specific findings of the fact from the de novo trial.
Correct. And in Stender, and I'm not familiar with the record in that case, but the opinion itself, it talks about when it came before the BTA, there were these appraisers that came and they testified, and the BTA basically said, we like $10 million. And I think the decision talks about summarily, which means there was no analysis, it was just, here's $10 million, off you go. And then it was appealed to the district court. And when it went up to the district court, we had the same experts come back in with a rebuttal expert, and there were some notes that we read in the rebuttal expert, all that. Then the court reached a value of $17 million. In that case, I don't think we have the record at the BTA level that we do here. The only thing to attack, if you're using 63-23-18, is that $10 million number, because both our the original decision of the BTA was summarily decided it was $10 million. And on the reconsideration, it did the exact same thing. The BTA did the same thing. It didn't go through the 29-page analysis like this BTA did. So I think that case is distinguishable from this one because the county had the opportunity to carry its burden of proof and say, the BTA messed up because A, B, and C. And here are the provisions. And the judge, I think, was appropriate not to read that ahead of time because he assumed, I believe, I have no idea actually what the judge assumed. I'm going to argue that the judge would be waiting for the burden of proof, the party carrying it, to present that evidence and say, this is where the error was, and here's our expert that supports that.
Aren't the appellants still going to stand up here in a minute and say Stender is exactly on point because what we have was a district judge looking at decisions that appear to be somewhat summarily made without articulation below, and a district court saying, well, this is what I'm going to do, and here's why I'm going to do it.
Correct. The only difference between that case and this one is the district judge said here, I didn't hear that they challenged the decision of the BTA. In the Stender case, they clearly did because they had the $10 million number, and they said that number needs to be.
It isn't really the difference that in Stender, the trial judge, the district judge, went through extensive findings and extensive clues and conclusions and justified the result, and here we have just the opposite.
We have the opposite because the county failed to carry the burden. If the county would have carried the burden, I think the district judge would have went through that entire analysis.
Again, that just sounds conclusory. I mean, how can you say they didn't carry the burden without an explanation of the actual evidence that was presented during 9 days of testimony? I would expect from 9 days of testimony a little longer decision than we got in this case.
I suppose it goes to the burden of proof and what the statute says, Your Honor.
If we have a question what the decision is that's being appealed from, why wouldn't we look at the statement of purpose of the bill that put that language in, and that statement of purpose says this is about essentially making it easier to challenge the assessment.
And I believe that changing the burden of proof did make it easier. I think the legislature's focus, though, was to frankly help taxpayers get a change to their assessment because the burden of proof is lower. The legislature and its state, I don't think that statement addresses the different word that was used, valuation versus decision. And that is the challenge of this court is to interpret what the legislature meant by that word. And my position is that they must mean something different.
Although we do, our jurisprudence also says when we're doing statutory interpretation, that we can look to previous iterations of the statute to inform what the current statute means. And when I see a statute that was couched in terms of reviewing basically a BTA decision for an abuse of discretion to now changing it to a de novo review, that's to me is signaling something markedly different. A de novo review, not only a de novo review, but appears to give a trial de novo, which goes back to my question to Mr. Smith, which is, are we doing this right? I mean, we're calling the initial document in this case is called a petition for judicial review, and yet this statute seems to be laying out a very different process, and so maybe it's a disconnect between a process and a substantive statute.
And the prior statutes, in the way that they were drafted, I believe they also allowed the de novo. And you were attacking the decision of either your BTA, and it had kind of the same structure I started out the argument with. And it is confusing, because you have this de novo, which Rule 84 says that's brand new. You do everything from the scratch. But it also says, unless otherwise provided for by statute. And I think that's where these cases fit in. These fit in on an interpretation of what the legislature intended by these different statutes as it went through it. And I think we have to give credit to what the legislature said in interpreting how we resolve this case. And I think the Stender case addressed that. We talked about amalgamated sugar. That case is really the first sentence of this statute, or this section of the statute dealing with issues, because on that case on appeal, the taxpayer argued, well, you did this analysis at the BTA with only these two approaches to valuation, and now you're using all three, and that's three different issues. There was only two issues, so you can't argue it. And the court, I think, was correct in saying the issue is the value of the property under the de novo trial. Then, if we look at how the next sentence is read, if we're going to distinguish it from what the legislature did in Section 511, we have to say, okay, what was the point of this de novo trial? We call witnesses to attack something, either evaluation conclusion under 511 or a decision.
So, Mr. Smith, I'm trying to understand. Are you arguing that 6338.12 is ambiguous? And if so, what's your reasonable interpretation of the way in which your client views the ambiguity?
I don't believe it's ambiguous. I think the word decision is clear. It is the written document that the BTA put out with its analysis and how it reached its conclusion on the values of the property. I think that's where the legislature is looking at. I can't say that's an ambiguous. I couldn't think of another meaning of that word other than that. And I think the legislature, in using the word evaluation, was specific again. And that is the conclusion. That's the last page. These are the numbers. This is how much the property's worth. And for some reason, the legislature decided in 3812, they wanted us to focus, the burden of proof. I was the taxpayer coming before you, and I went to court, and I presented my evidence, and my expert was the best. And the county says, we never talked about the BTA decision. I can guarantee you the rules were reversed. They'd say, you missed it. Your first step was you had to attack that decision. You had to show why that decision was wrong. It's a quasi-denial appeal, and the legislature is mixing these two things, and they're very hard to justify, but I have to...
When you call it a quasi-denial, you've added a word to the statute that doesn't exist.
And that's just that was nothing I'm adding to the statute.
So you're changing the statute by calling it a quasi-denial.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think the de novo in the first sentence talks about a new hearing with new evidence, discovery, new witnesses. The second sentence talks about where you focus that evidence, and you're focusing it on the decision of the BTA. You have to show that that was erroneous. That's a de novo hearing.
But why do you need a de novo hearing to know what's wrong with the BTA decision? You know what's wrong with the BTA decision when you read it. And there's no analysis at all for how they arrived at the number. You don't need an expert to tell you. You would come in and make that argument to the district court. There's no analysis here, Your Honor. You've got to send it back.
Perhaps in a different case, I think this case did have analysis. That being said, I think I would still need to present the court with this is why this BTA returned this evidence at its level is incorrect. And it made this analysis, this decision, wrote it out, told us why it did what it did. And here's an expert, which I think I would have to have, an appraiser, say, well, they missed this step. They relied on Mr. Arney when they shouldn't have, or they did this when they shouldn't have, or they used this memory.
You're going to do that. You don't need an expert to say all that. You know how to tear apart an opinion and make it as a legal argument. That's not the subject of a trial.
And I suppose I could, but it's a de novo trial. I've got to have witnesses. I suppose I could try to do it on a summary judgment or something of that nature. But I think I would need evidence if I'm going to have a de novo trial to attack that written decision.
I know we're past time. May I ask one more question?
Okay.
Is there any evidence from the district court's findings and conclusions that it considered or weighed any of the evidence that was presented at the trial de novo?
No, because it found the county didn't carry its burden of proof.
Then what's the point of having a 9-day trial de novo?
May I answer the question?
You're just going through the motions, it looks to me.
Please answer the question.
The point is for the de novo trial is for the party bringing the appeal to have an opportunity to carry its burden of proof. That is the point of that de novo trial.
So that sounds more like a de novo hearing.
I guess you would characterize it that way, Your Honor, but you are... The legislature has focused us, like a lady, on what we need to attack on this type of appeal.
Thank you. And thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Madam Clerk, how much time do you account that left?
9 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Members of the court, I'd like to try to clear up some of this confusion between decision and valuation, because I think we've gotten off track here. The way counsel presented it, it sounded like there's a discrepancy between the process in appealing from a county commissioner's value or BOE value to the Board of Tax Appeals. He says that that statute is focused on value, whereas 63-3812 uses the word decision. Now, I made this point in response to a question earlier, and the word decision could relate to value. It also could relate to exemptions. I mean, an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals, a Board of Tax Appeals decision could address an exemption issue. And in fact, this decision did address an exemption issue. It addressed how the personal property exemption should be applied, whether it's applied on a property-by-property basis or to a taxpayer. So there was an exemption. And 63-511 sub 4 does say that you can appeal a BOE decision on value, or you can appeal the denial of an exemption at the BOE level. So either of those denials is going to go up to the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals is going to decide. So you can't use the word valuation in 3812 and cover all the types of appeals that may be occurring either to the Board of Tax Appeals or from the Board of Tax Appeals to the district court. The word decision more accurately captures the types of issues that may come up from the Board of Tax Appeals to the district court. Now, let me give you one other kernel of information that makes helpful on this, and that is the statute says that the district court reviews the issues that were raised in the context of the decision made by the Board of Tax Appeals. When Churchill County appealed the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, it identified the issues that it was appealing. Okay, the issue it was appealing was value. That was the value decision. You know, you can choose what you decide to appeal, right? If there are many decisions that the Board of Tax Appeals is making, you can decide which of those decisions you are appealing. Churchill County appealed the decision on valuation. That was the case before the district court. That was the decision that had been appealed to the district court. That was the decision the district court said was part of a case at the first hour of the trial.
Well, doesn't every appeal appeal the decision, and then the attorneys decide what are the issues on appeal? I mean, isn't that just another way of saying what happened here?
Well, perhaps, but it does focus attention. What part of the decision is being appealed, especially within the statute? If someone believes that the word decision is ambiguous, and I really don't, especially in light of the fact that you've got two different distinct issues that could come up, exemption or valuation, and it has to cover both of those.
Well, we're dealing about the difference between an administrative proceeding versus a court proceeding. In a court proceeding, you appeal the judgment, right?
Right.
And then the issues that are being appealed related to that judgment. Well, if it's a decision, isn't that analogous to a judgment?
It is, but I guess the fact that the word issues is also part of the statute, and that's what is before the court, is what is the issue being appealed? What issue within that decision is being appealed? I just want to hit a couple of other points. And I think most of this has come out in the questions from the court. What more could we do, right, to show the Board of Tax Appeals decision was incorrect? We challenged the value, $6.3 million. The council keeps saying we didn't carry a burden of proof that the value was more than $6.3 million. How could we not have? Their own expert was at 8.5. We clearly showed the value was more than what the BTA determined. So what else was in the BTA decision that we had to carry the burden of proving incorrect? I mentioned the only substantive things the BTA talked about were the income approach. Well, the income approach was Arnie's income approach. I think we dealt with that. The other thing they mentioned was the sale of the property. Arnie himself didn't use the sale of the previous sale of the property as a comparable sale. There were many reasons that we identified as being important and the Jans versus Blaine County case goes into all that about how a single sale of the property does not represent reliable evidence of value. So The only three things I can think about that are in the BTA decision that were substantive beyond just parroting, just repeating what the evidence was presented, we attacked at the district court level.
If we agree that you carried your burden, your client carried its burden, what is the proper remedy here?
I think it's a remand to the district court to hopefully implement what he concluded and what he signaled would be his decision. He found our witnesses to be more credible. I think the decision of the district court would be a rule in our favor. I don't know that this court can do that. I don't know that you have the authority to do that, but I think it would be a remand.
It would seem to me there's two options here. One is, if we don't affirm, would be to remand with instructions to decide the case in light of the record presented at the prior de novo hearing, or to remand it for a new de novo hearing. Would there be any reason why there needs to be a new hearing on this? Is there not a record that exists that the court can make a decision on?
Oh, absolutely. There is no reason to have a new record. I do want to address the standard case. Counsel said that in the Supreme Court decision, it does say that the BTA summarily decided that the value was $10 million. I don't know what that word summarily means. There's other wording in the Supreme Court opinion that talks about other parts of the BTA decision, so I don't think it was just a one-paragraph decision, but we don't know, right? But I don't know that the word summarily is inaccurate as a way of describing what this BTA decided. You know, again, they had 20 pages of narration of what the witnesses said, a couple of pages identifying what the statute and standard of review was, and then two or three pages discussing some of the issues in the case with ultimate conclusions of value that you have to guess as to how they concluded. But otherwise, the Stender case, the Amalgamated Sugar case, and the Pacific Corp case are very much like this case. This is a battle of experts. You know, and I guess to get one more point back to the BTA, if we have to get more than the three things I talked about, the $6.3 million, which we proved, the other things, do we need to depose? You know, is the BTA decision a piece of evidence before the district court? I mean, it sounds like it's kind of a target that counsel would have us shoot for as a piece of expert opinion that we need to disprove. If that's the case, I think I need to depose a BTA, a member of the BTA. And say, okay, it's not clear to me, you know, member Moon, how you determine this value. I need to get more information. I just don't see that the BTA opinion of value is an independent piece of evidence that we need to address. Back to Stender, though, Stender was very much like this case. There was a rebuttal witness that came in. An entirely new witness that was not before the BTA, and it was the rebuttal witness's value.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel, appreciate your arguments. The standards under the budget hearing. Being recessed until 10:00.
All rise, please.